Hello and welcome back to Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Daniel McFadden. We're back here to talk about NASCAR for the next 20 straight weeks. No more off weeks. And with me through the rest of the way is my co-host, Jared Haas. Jared, how was your off week?
You're telling me we're 20 weeks sitting in this chair? Whew! This off week was much needed. I actually moved into a new apartment during this off time, so it's a little bit refreshing, getting ready for the final stretch before the playoffs, and then into the playoffs. Going to have a lot of stuff rolling into from now until November.
But yeah, we're coming off the off week. The week before that, NASCAR was at Sonoma Raceway. That race was won by Martin Truex Jr. for his second win of the season. Jared, you said you didn't get to watch much of that race. It was uneventful for the most part. There was only two cautions, which tied the all-time low for the track. There was a brief period of time where it seemed like maybe there wouldn't be any cautions, but there was two, including one for a tire in the middle of pit road, which shook things up and got a little bit of a weird top 10 compared to what we probably would have gotten beforehand.
But I want you to erase the word bored out of the category. I did watch the Xfinity race, and with these, what happened with the stage cautions here is you got to mix up a strategy. You had drivers that played the strategy well. You had like Kyle Busch, and then drivers that didn't, I think was like Kyle Larson, for example, got bit by the strategy. And you even saw that with the Xfinity race. If you didn't have Alex LeBay and Daniel Suarez stay out longer and stay out in the front of the field, the field would have been shuffled, would not been shuffled up. Kyle Larson would have ran away with the Xfinity race, but instead, Eric Almirola was the one to get out ahead. So there was still events that was going on, even though you might say it's just boring. Martin Truex Jr. ran with it away. Still, a lot of people play strategy to get into a better position.
Well, I didn't say boring. I said uneventful. Difference.
There's still that
difference.
Well, there's still going to be people that said this is boring.
But yeah.
Again, that's. This was like the calm version of COTA. COTA was pretty chaotic at the end, but you know, you're going to have some of those races that there's not going to be a lot that's going on, but we at least had the strategy to keep us interested.
So just briefly running down the top 10 for Sonoma, Martin Truex won over Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch was one of the guys who had pit strategy. Joey Logano, Chris Buescher, who you know also finished in the top five there last year. Chase Elliott was fifth. He's another guy that had the pit strategy. A.J. Allmendinger in sixth. Michael McDowell, who looked like he could have been a car that could have contended there at the end until a bad pit stop. He finished seventh. Then Kyle Larson, Christopher Bell, and Ross Chastain was 10th. And you noted before we started recording that this was Chastain's first top 10 since Kansas, which was, you know, way back last month. So he kind of fell off the radar there for a little bit. And I believe I picked him to win.
I picked
Sonoma.
Cedric, and I mean from the get go.
I don't remember.
He finished 25th. Penske did not have a good weekend. The Fords were a lot stronger last year. The Toyotas made a lot of gains, as proven this past Sunday. You had Truex and even Denny Hamlin leaving the first portion of the race. But the Fords kind of just fell off there, and you saw it during practice. And I did change my race pick before then, but you know, mid-season, looking at the Fords, they still had three drivers in the top 10. Far cry from last year, though.
Yeah, Martin Truex Jr., second one of the year. He's winning at places he's good at. He won at Dover, where he's had multiple wins. Once at Sonoma, this was his fourth Sonoma win, or third? Fourth or third?
He's had multiple wins here at Sonoma.
So, but he's good there. And so, what do you think his chances are to make a championship run? Because he's finished eighth or better in seven of the last nine races. The exceptions were a 27th at Talladega and a 31st at Darlington, where he led 145 laps before he was in a wreck. And he's been in the top 10 points all year. Is he the guy who's going to kind of swoop in there for a title run, do you think?
He's lining it up to having a good run and getting those points. But at the end of the day, let's remember, the postseason is a whole different animal. It doesn't matter what you're doing in the summer months and these summer seasons. It matters what happens in the postseason. What matters here is what you're building up to. And, you know, the past 6 weeks, Martin Truex Jr. scored two wins, getting a lot of points, getting a lot of playoff points. So that way he's able to build up that, that lead. And in the regular season standings, with that win, Martin Truex Jr. is the points standings leader right now.
Yeah, and he has 11 playoff points.
He's 11 playoff points, which are important. So he's definitely building it up. But again, we saw that last year with Chase Elliott. He built up a huge margin in the summer months. Mm-hmm. Helped him get through the playoffs, even though he didn't have the best run. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's about executing, especially those final few races in the playoffs.
So we're at the halfway point in the season. So I thought it would be a good time for us to share two surprises and two predictions.
Yes.
Two surprises so far for the year and then predictions for the last half. We each got two. So you go first, Jared. What is your first surprise of the first half of the year?
I mean, Martin Truex Jr. is a big surprise, but I want to make mention of the good old quote-unquote cheating.
Okay.
That's been happening in the NASCAR garage. It's been a lot more prevalent this year compared to last year. When the next gen was kind of introduced, it was supposed to more or less equal the playing field, more in the driver's hand, not really in the team's hand. Here's are the supplier parts. Don't mess with these parts. There were quite a few drivers that got penalized for that. I think Brad Keselowski, Kevin Harvick. There was a handful of drivers there last year, but this year, quite a few more penalties, especially with Hendrick Motorsports. They've got hit with six penalties. You had the four with the louvers, and you had the greenhouse stuff, and even other teams. Justin Haley got hit with a penalty. You had, I believe, Austin Dillon. You had Chase Briscoe as well, too.
Eric Jones.
So you had a lot more people are playing around with this. It's the second year. And I think the big question to ask for NASCAR, is this next-gen car really solving the issue of people not innovating anymore? Like I said, the teams are not going to call it that they're cheating. They're innovating.
I know one team that was innovating was Stewart Haas Racing with their huge $250,000 fine for their penalty for a counterfeit part. Mm-hmm. That's the first time I've ever heard of that in NASCAR, was a counterfeit part.
And the ironic thing, it was supposed to help, I think it was like the drag, and it was performance at Charlotte. Didn't really help him, especially during the early stages. But, yeah, I mean, you've seen teams pushing more and more on the bounds. And, I mean, to be fair with this system, especially with the playoffs, now you don't have to be in the top 30 in points. Now you can screw around and have as many illegal parts as you can. If you don't get caught and you get your win, hey, away, you're good to go. You're going to be in the playoffs. But, you know, it's those risk assessment that they're realizing now is we can bend the rules a little bit. If we get our win, we're good to go. If we don't get caught... Mm-hmm. That's fine by me, and I think teams are starting to pick that up more and more.
And Dustin Long, my former colleague at NBC Sports, earlier this month, he did a Friday 5 column where he wrote that after the first 14 races of the year, NASCAR had levied out $975,000 in penalties against teams in the NASCAR Cup Series. So just right there at close to $1 million in penalties through the halfway point in the season. That's a lot of dough.
Yeah, that's a lot of penalties this year that happened. A lot of major penalties as well.
So, all right, my first surprise for the first half of the year is AJ Allmendinger not quite performing like I had kind of hoped he would in his first full-time year back in the Cup Series with Colleague Racing after, you know, just dominating in the Xfinity Series for a couple of years. He's only has four top 15 finishes since the Daytona 500, but those all have come in the last five races. So there's been a little bit of an upswing for Allmendinger right here at the midway point. But I really thought that that outside of like road courses, we'd have the opportunity to maybe see him compete up front a little bit more. And that the fact that that hasn't happened, I'm a little bit surprised. What about you?
It seems like actually Colleague's kind of been a little bit more down this year. Even Justin Haley has a average finishing position worse than last year. Mm. Only three top tens, no top fives compared to last year where the whole season he had three top fives and four top tens. With Allmendinger, he's still, again, worse average running position compared to last year. Only two top tens, the four top 15s you mentioned. I think it's a little bit still that Allmendinger's learning this next-gen car, getting into his style, and getting full-time in that. But you would think he'd picked up a little bit more, and on road courses too, especially. He was there on Sunday, but he wasn't the dominant factor at Sonoma.
Yeah, he, like I said, that was a road course. He's never won at Sonoma, so but he's, I think it's like the like of all the major road course races NASCAR's competed at, I feel like that's like the one track he hasn't won at.
Well, let's remember, it was mainly for the longest time, it was just the Cup Series.
Yeah.
That was going to Sonoma, and the two wins that Allmendinger has in the Cup Series is Watkins Glen and the Indy Road Course. So, like I said, there hasn't been really a lot of opportunities for Allmendinger to win it, but we'll see how colleagues' Cup Series program can turn it around in the second half.
All right, well, what's your second surprise for the first half of the season, Jared?
How perfectly, I'd say, stage cautions have with the road courses, what we saw last Sunday and at COTA, how much more the ebb and flow of racing has brought back without those stage cautions too. It seems like the strategy is a little bit more involved. We almost had a very exciting fuel strategy race at Circuit of the Americas, which all went to pot after everyone was wrecking each other on the starts. But, you know, you still had that strategy, as I mentioned, with the Xfinity race and the Cup race. You had players that were playing the strategy just right. If we had those stage cautions for the Xfinity race, for example, Kyle Larson would have waltzed with the field, would have been another, oh, Kyle Larson won this race, but, you know, another boring race. It wasn't the cautions that's been making, you know, that makes the racing interesting. It's just strategy-wise of this, what the other teams can make the type of advantage, and especially with road course cautions, if you're with a field strategy, you're counting backwards, and if you got stages already, that makes your job a heck of a lot easier. So, but yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that you should even expand not having stage cautions, awarding stage points, but not stage cautions on ovals? Or is the road courses quite content?
I think I'm content with road courses because, like, ovals, they can just kind of go on, and you need something to spice it up.
To be fair, I mean, like the Coca-Cola 600.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a pretty good race without those stage cautions.
Well,
I'm looking at the terms of right now because I understand when the stage cautions were introduced and the stage points was to try to spice up the oval racing when the oval racing was not the best product. But now, I mean, the oval racing with this next-gen cars plays hand-in-hand with these intermediate tracks.
Well, I would make the argument, especially with the Coke 600, because the stage finishes in the Coke 600 were really, really good. And I think they were like that because you had that caution coming up.
But, I mean, if you don't have a caution, you're still going to be racing for those points.
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, you're not going to wreck somebody for stage points or stage win. It's still going to happen whether it's caution under the green. It's just, do we bunch them up and just send them down to pit road? It's a strategy on that. So that's my more surprise of how well these lack of stage cautions of the road course on that. And I think it can even work well on these, especially those intermediate oval tracks. So I will throw it over to you for your other surprise.
All right, my surprise, second surprise for the first half of the 2023 season is Eric Jones and the 43 team taking a step back from where they were at last year. Right now, Eric Jones and the 43, they had five top tens at this point last year. And this year, they only have two. I mean, across the board, Legacy Motor Club's not doing great this year, but I really, really thought that 43 team would be able to just kind of like build on what they did last year, winning the Southern 500. And so far, that's just not been the case. Jones was 16th in the points last year. And he's 30th now, but that's after a 60-point penalty that he received. Without it, he would be, I think, 27th.
Yeah.
27th. That's where Chase Elliott is right now.
I find it interesting that, you know, we had Ty Dillon leave, you know, the Petty GMS Legacy Motor Club team last year, and they were performing well. And then all of a sudden you got Ty Dillon, even though with Spire Motorsports, he's not performing well with Spire. Corey LaJoyce suddenly stepped it up too, and Legacy Motor Clubs took that step back. Interesting to note with that, with the changes that went on between 2022 and 2023, but yeah, it's kind of weird that you think Legacy Motor Club with the reband, they would be taking a step forward, especially with Jimmy Johnson in the fold. It just hasn't panned out.
So hopefully they just needed a week off to get things fixed and heading in the right
I think
direction.
They need a new manufacturer.
And they will be getting that next year. So I wonder, I bet they're counting down the days.
Yeah.
So All right, so moving on to our bold predictions for the second half of the 2023 season that are sure to go wrong. I'll go first. I don't think Chase Elliott will make the playoffs. What do you think?
I mean, it's tough to say. We got to look at
He's only been in 9 races this year so far. That's still crazy.
He hasn't been off. We got to look at the mathematical side, the realistic side on that. Chase Elliott's only 94 points out, so he has to gain 10 points per race. Gonna be a little bit tough, could be reasonable, but again, it's that win factor of can he win on that, and Hendrick Motorsports has seemed to be, especially in the early season, like the top dog. You've already had William Byron get wins. You've had Kyle Larson gets wins, so, you know, it's the when for Chase Elliott. He's got 10 weeks to do it, so there's a good possibility, and I believe Chase Elliott won here last year Nashville.
Yes. So, Chase Elliott did win the Nashville race last year.
So there's a good possibility that he could miss it. I think he could get those. I think he can get a win before then, but it's going to be a tough. If he's just going to do it on points, what there's probably going to be drivers that are going to get on in 5 points, 94 points, he's out from 16th, which is held by his teammate Alex Bowman.
Yeah, but Chase Elliott, like I said, predictions that are sure to go wrong. I don't think Chase Elliott will make the playoffs. In his 9 starts, he does have 3 top fives. But his Sonoma finish, which was in the top 5, that was helped by pit strategy.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure where he was before that pit stop. But anyway, what is your first prediction?
I'm going to go with the tamer of the two predictions that I have. I'm actually going to go with Ricky Stenhouse Jr. My prediction is that he will advance to the round of 12. I think a lot of people are going to have him out early in his bracket, but he is definitely performing a lot better if you look at quite a few of his finishes. Obviously, he finished 32nd at Gateway, but you look at Sonoma, 12th, Coca-Cola 600, 7th, Darlington, 13th, Kansas, 12th, Dover, 15th, Talladega, 15th, Martinsville, 8th, Bristol Dirt, 4th. He's held.
Where did he finish in Darlington?
He finished 13th.
Okay, so the first round of the playoffs is Darlington, Kansas, Bristol.
Yeah.
So had a good run at Darlington, had a good run at Kansas.
It was Bristol Dirt where he finished 4th. But, you know, you just, with especially that first round, maintaining can be just enough. I know he's probably going to be on the downside in that end. But if you have a couple playoff drivers have those difficulties, I mean, you had Kyle Busch last season. He dropped out early in the first round. He can make a push to the round of 12, and you can even see something like what he did, Daniel Suarez did last year. He made the round of 8, I believe, and, you know, the Stenhouse with the right positioning. And if he can get those good runs, turning those top 12s into top 10s, into top 5s, watch out for that 47 team. But I think there's going to be quite a few people on their bracket going to make him out in the round 16. I say he's going to advance to the round of 12.
And he has 5 top 10s so far this year, which matches his total for all of last year. And that's the most he's had. 5 3 times this year, last year, and in 2018. His career high was 9 in 2017. That was the year he had 2 wins also. Yeah. But his average finish is 14.5 right now. That's the best of his career. And speaking of Ricky Stenhouse Jr., you can check out our last episode from last week, which was an exclusive interview with Ricky Stenhouse Jr. So please be sure to check that episode out. So Ricky Stenhouse Jr. advances to the round of 12. All right, we'll see if that happens. Mine's probably pretty bold. I think Kevin Harvick gets a walk-off championship win.
I felt like we were saying that last year, and he just completely fell off.
Because he wanted to save it. He wanted to save it for this year. save it for the farewell tour.
You know, there's been a lot of wacky things that have happened in the playoffs. I mean, you had, Ryan Newman almost winning the championship that one year. So, I mean, nothing is out of the realm of possibility with Kevin Harvick, and he has been the best Stewart Haas racing car. Pretty interesting bold prediction.
He was on his way to winning Phoenix earlier this year, and then there was a caution that wrapped him back, them back up.
He's had good short track speed, too. Mm-hmm. And with the season finale being at Phoenix, there's a good possibility. Again, is the question is, can that path be attainable for Harvick?
He's finished outside the top 15 only 4 times this year. That's impressive. He's been in the top 5 in points for all but 2 weeks. So his farewell tour, he's being consistent. Like, he's staying in the mix. This could be the year that someone finally wins the championship without winning the race at Phoenix. Could be. It might be the year.
Matt Crafton might have a word for you for without winning an entire season. Yeah. I mean, we had that. Yeah, you know, that's a possibility again. But, you know, drivers, especially those championship fours, are going to bring their best car to Phoenix. So they're not going to mess around. But I'm going to go with my other prediction, which is a little bit more spicy. I think Trackhouse Racing goes winless this year.
Okay.
Their sales really went out of them after the Ross Chastain incident, after Darlington. And we mentioned that was Ross Chastain's first top 10 since Kansas, and that was before the Darlington deal. And he even looked to Ross Chastain's teammate, Daniel Suarez. It's been a year since Trackhouse has won. It's crazy to believe that. We were talking about Ross Chastain not winning. Daniel Suarez only won at Sonoma last year. Wasn't really a factor this year. So,
and well, he had that missed shift, like on the first lap.
He had that missed shift at there too, and then even at COTA, he wasn't really a factor. I mean, he started fifth, finished 27th, only led one lap, and that was kind of the race that last year that were, you know, Daniel Suarez was trying to make himself a little bit more serious. So the stock is down to Trackhouse Racing after the Ross Chastain experience kind of boiled over. But, you know, Ross Chastain seems like he's lost his rhythm. He wasn't there. He wasn't really contending at Charlotte or at Gateway. Of course, strategy played into his role to get him a top 10. But I don't see Trackhouse scoring another win this year.
I'd be surprised, really surprised if they made it all the way to Phoenix without winning a race. That'd be really, really, really shocking, especially after how strong Ross was just to start the year. So, but yeah, that'd be very, very, very surprising. So, all right, moving on to our preview for this weekend's NASCAR Cup race at Nashville Super Speedway. All right, NASCAR Cup Series, after a week off, we'll be back in action on Sunday at Nashville Super Speedway. It's the start of the NBC portion of the TV schedule, which I'm glad it's here. I'm very, 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 very glad it's here. So they will have the TV coverage all the way through the playoffs and through the end of the season. So this is the Cup Series. It's third time going to Nashville. This track was one of those tracks that opened in the early 2000s during the boom period. Didn't get a Cup date, but hosted Xfinity races. I think truck races too. But 2 years ago, they went to Nashville for the first time. The inaugural race was won by Kyle Larson. And then last year, Chase Elliott won it after Denny Hamlin actually dominated most of the race, leading 114 laps. So Hendrick has had Nashville on lock for the first 2 years. Also, the first 2 years, Larson and Ross Chastain were the only drivers to finish in the top five of both races. So I liked this track. I think last year's race was really, really good.
Besides the delay, I was there last year, and I will be again this year at Nashville this weekend for frontstretch.com. I am actually glad that they're starting this race later on. It gets really hot during the midday. They were having troubles during the Xfinity race, so I applaud NASCAR for at least having a later start date for the races this weekend.
So yeah, that will be at 6 p.m. Central on NBC. That's when it starts. Like I said, like this track, it kind of serves as a mix of an intermediate and a short track, because the turns are kind of really have a really sharp curve to them. So especially in the first year, that impacted like brakes and stuff.
That was the big issue on that, and we had that at Gateway a couple weeks ago. That was the big topic on that. But I mean, Nashville's overall, at least there's a little bit more banking on the speed on that, and it's a concrete track as well too. And you know who won in concrete at Dover? Martin Truex Jr. Who won last week? Martin Truex Jr. Are we sensing a pattern here, Daniel?
I don't know, Jared.
Are we going to get into some predictions?
Yeah, let's go. Who do you got winning the Ally 400?
Well, I mean, Martin Truex would be almost a too lazy, an easy pickup. But I'm still going to stay with the Toyota camp. He's going to get white hot again. I'm still going to pick Denny Hamlin again. Good last year. Kyle Larson's still going to be a good bet, but I think Denny Hamlin, those Toyotas were pretty good last year. They just got, you know, beat by Chase Elliott. So I'm just going to go with the Toyota camp.
I was going to pick Hamlin, so now I got to choose a different one.
See, aren't we thinking the same wavelength? It's kind of funny with that.
Okay, so Ryan Blaney just won the Coke 600, won it in convincing fashion. He was third there at Nashville last year, so he got a top five. So
he overcame. If I remember that correctly, he actually spun.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
he spun and was able to recover to a top five finish.
At what point did that happen in the race?
There's not a
caution for it. Not listed anyway.
Yes, but that did happen. I remember that coming off of turn four. Ryan Blaney had issues, but he was able to come back. And yeah, and even Kurt Busch finished second down in that race.
Yeah, I didn't remember that. So, but yeah, coming off his win in the Coke 600, I'm gonna go with Blaney. See how he does.
Solid pick. Let's see if Ford's got their pieces together after being left behind in the road courses. So, I mean, like I said, you got Blaney, I've got Denny Hamlin.
All right, we'll see how that turns out. So, how excited are you for the second half of the season, just in general?
I'm pretty excited. I was getting my schedule finalized for some of those races, and there's quite a few races that I'm going to, and it's definitely going to be a blast of some of the tracks. I'll leave it up a little bit of surprise, but like I said, Nashville's the next race, and the race after that, it's going to be Road America for just an Xfinity Series race. Going to do some standalone events.
That's a fun track to go to, so I hope you enjoy that. I will be at Chicago, the Chicago Street Course, next weekend for that the inaugural event, and I'm excited for that.
Yeah,
I'm ready to witness some history.
So we got back-to-back weekends again. We're going to be off on the track. So,
but that will be my last race to cover for the year. So, gotta pretty much have all my vacation time used up now. Thanks to NASCAR. So, but anyway, yeah, this weekend, Nashville Super Speedway Sunday at 6 p.m. Central on NBC. I'm excited. Let's finish this year out strong. 20 straight weeks, man. They need more off weeks. But anyway,
I just say they just need to put another off weekend and just extend the schedule just one more week.
Yeah, that'd work too.
I say put it in April.
That'd work. But anyway, I'm Dan McFadden. You can reach me on Twitter at Dan McFadden, or you can email us about the show at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. Jared, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at RealJaredHaas.
And please make sure to like, subscribe to the show, give us a rating, helps people find the show. And if you are interested in subscribing to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, if you find the webpage for this episode, there should be a link on it to a special subscription rate of $5 for the first five months each for the first 2 months of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette digital subscription.
Helps us bring this content right to you.
So please do that, help us out. Anyway, I'm Daniel McFadden, this has been Jared Haas. Have a great week, everyone.